Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
What we need to do is pass the mother of all repeal bills, but it's the repeal bill that will get of job-killing regulations. And I would begin with the EPA, because there is no other agency like the EPA. It should really be renamed the Job-Killing Organization of America.
Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from last night's Republican presidential hopefuls debate on CNN. Good morning, everyone. We will hear a few clips to begin today, not of the candidates bashing President Obama, which is what most of the media has been focusing on. Obviously, they're going to criticize the Democratic incumbent, but on what we think you're probably more interested in, what these candidates actually propose to do about the faltering economy. Then in a few minutes, we'll hear from former New York Governor Eliot Spitzer, who has a new book called Government's Place in the Market. Here now to help us walk us through a few debate clips is Raihan Salam, columnist for The Daily and blogger for National Review Online, also author of the book Grand New Party, How Republicans Can Win the Working Class and Save the American Dream. Hey, Raihan, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Who is Michelle Bachmann speaking to when she calls the EPA the job-killing organization of America?
Michelle Bachmann is speaking to Republican primary voters. A lot of Republicans identify very strongly with small business, with small-scale entrepreneurs, and there is a pervasive sense that regulation is a great barrier to creating employment and to allowing for flourishing young businesses in the country. She said something in a very strong way that was a version of a point that a lot of people, including at least some moderate Democrats, are making, which is that we might have these regulatory accretions that have become a really big problem for the economy.
How much of an economic difference, leaving even aside the question of how much of an environmental difference, how much of an economic difference, in your opinion, could whatever rollback of the EPA regulations we're talking about make, especially if she sees it in such strong and sweeping terms?
Well, I think that on a year-to-year basis, would it make a difference in terms of getting out of our jobless recovery and into a job-creating recovery? I think the answer is probably no. Would it make a larger difference over the much longer term? I think the answer is yes, both for ill and for good.
Another proposal from a candidate in the debate last night, this one from former Godfather's Pizza CEO Herman Cain.
Let's fix the problem, and that is to restructure Social Security. I support a personal retirement account option in order to phase off the current system. We know that this works. It worked in the small country of Chile when they did it 30 years ago.
President Bush tried to go there with just a few percent of Social Security being privatized, and it failed politically. Cain talked there about phasing out the whole Social Security system. Again, do you think he speaks for the GOP mainstream, or who's he talking to with that?
I don't think he speaks to the mainstream, but I do think that he, for example, is proposing something that the Nobel laureate Edward Prescott proposed some years ago. And the idea is an interesting one. It's actually saying that we would need to take on a huge amount of debt to transition to this new system. That new system might be a more stable system that is more encouraging of work effort and economic growth. But the problem is that Republicans have been talking constantly about how debt is the absolute worst thing in the world. And that would be a huge part of that transition.
What's the model in Chile that he referred to?
The model in Chile is not necessarily something that's directly applicable in the United States, but it is a model in which Chileans use personal accounts that they invest in a variety of different with a variety of different financial services companies that are chosen by the government. These are accounts that are chosen as safe. And it's a system that worked in part because the number of people who had public pensions in Chile was somewhat smaller. And it was also a system where they were kind of starting from scratch and building that system rather than transitioning from a large existing system that a lot of people depended on.
Subtitle of your book is How Republicans Can Win the Working Class and Save the American Dream. Do you think a system like that could work for the working class, or would they just not have enough money to put away to create a comfortable retirement?
I think that a system like that could work for the working class if you allowed for the enormous transition costs. So, for example, one way you could structure it is to create a forced savings program akin to what you see in Australia and a variety of other countries. And what you would do is you'd say, you know, between 18 and 25, you pay nothing into the system, then you start paying more as you get older, and that account will grow over time. The beauty of that is that it would actually encourage labor market contributions for younger workers and also give them some more money when they get started in their economic life.
Here's maybe the most interesting economy clip of the night for me, and it comes from former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, predicting an almost unprecedented high growth rate if his policies were to be enacted.
Well, John, my plan involves a whole plan, not just cutting taxes. We're proposing to cut taxes, reduce regulation, speed up this pace of government, and to make sure that we have a pro-growth agenda. This president is a declinist. He views America as one of equals around the world. We're not the same as Portugal. We're not the same as Argentina. And this idea that we can't have 5% growth in America is hogwash. It's a defeatist attitude. If China can have 5% growth and Brazil can have 5% growth, then the United States of America can have 5% growth. And I don't accept.
Tim Pawlenty last night. That was an interesting answer, partly because he got in a foreign policy shot in the middle of an economy answer about Obama being a declinist. This is American exceptionalism in foreign policy, I think, referred to there. But in economic terms, what do you think of the 5% solution or articulating that as a goal, which historically would be an extremely high growth rate?
The thing that's frustrating is that Tim Pawlenty is saying that we can grow at 5% for a 10-year period of time, and there's no precedent for that for a mature economy. When you think about what GDP growth means, partly it's population growth. And I assume that Tim Pawlenty doesn't want to open up the floodgates and allow people from anywhere in the world to enter the United States. That would be disruptive in all kinds of ways. And the kind of productivity growth that it would require is just not plausible over a 10-year period of time. If we really knew how to fine-tune the economy in that way, then we would have done it a very long time ago. The problem is that we really are starved of revenue, and we're not likely to—we certainly shouldn't bank on a 5% growth rate for a 10-year period of time, and that's what Tim Pawlenty seems to be doing, and I think that that's foolish. We can aspire to it, but I don't think that's a realistic goal.
So Pawlenty, who I think a lot of commentators take very seriously as someone who is not well-known in America yet, but who is, you know, a serious grown-up who's managed a complex state, who maybe doesn't have the baggage of a Mitt Romney, and he's given, you know, serious answers to serious questions in the past. Was he just blowing smoke there on a really big thing?
I think that Tim Pawlenty needs to differentiate himself. I think that he needs to have a distinctive position, and I think he felt that this was the right way for him to do it. And it's not obvious yet that it was a terrible idea. So far, it hasn't paid dividends, but I can certainly see the political logic behind articulating this very clear goal and claiming that everyone who disagrees with you is a defeatist. The thing is that I don't think it's really taking with people.
Mitt Romney, who is getting most of the coverage this morning as somebody who came in as the front runner and came out as the front runner, didn't take a punch, et cetera, also didn't say as many specific things, I don't think, about economic proposals as the other candidates whose clips we're hearing. Here's one thing that Romney did say with respect to the coming deadline for raising the debt ceiling.
I believe we will not raise the debt ceiling unless the president finally is willing to be a leader on issues that the American people care about. And the number one issue that relates to that debt ceiling is whether the government is going to keep on spending money they don't have.
So that's the general Republican position right now. They're looking for some kind of major spending cuts from the Democrats in order to get that debt ceiling raised agreement. And the debt ceiling isn't to take on new debt. I think people are very confused about that. It's to pay the debts that have already been incurred or are already committed and built into the system. But was he saying anything new there or anything specific to him?
I don't think he was saying anything new, and I think that it's very shrewd. I think that Mitt Romney is thinking that if the race doesn't change, if new candidates don't enter, then he's not all that vulnerable, which means that he has to look to the general election and preserve as many options as he possibly can to go down different roads. If he preserves options, if he doesn't make explicit commitments to policies that he's going to pursue, that means that if he does wind up winning the presidency, he will have the ability to pivot as necessary to deal with changing economic circumstances.
Finally, back to Michelle Bachmann for one more proposal of hers.
What we need to do is today, the United States has the second highest corporate tax rate in the world. I'm a former federal tax lawyer. I've seen the devastation. We've got to bring that tax rate down substantially so that we're among the lowest in the industrialized world.
So the U.S. has relatively low personal taxes compared to other leading economies, but relatively high corporate taxes, right?
Yes. That's true, but it also reflects the fact that we have all kinds of carve-outs and deductions. And if you were to pursue that kind of base broadening reform, which President Obama, among many of the others, has endorsed, you'd wind up creating winners as well as many losers. And I think that's the big political barrier to fixing the corporate tax code.
Taken together, the GOP field, as we've heard it here, as people who watched the debate last night would have heard it, want what Republicans usually want. They want government to try to get out of the way of the economy rather than trying to do anything. I think your book and, you know, you in general don't quite buy that it's that simple.
Well, I think that there's a lot of damage that's been done with a lot of the policies that we've pursued in recent years. And I do think that, yes, I don't agree with all the candidates on every particular issue. And I do think that on taxes in particular, they tend to be pretty naive, or at least projecting that naivete to the primary electorate. But I was really struck by the fact that they were really talking about economic policy issues rather than a lot of the cultural issues that they might have talked about in the past. And they seemed to be on message. They didn't accuse the president of being a socialist. They weren't talking about civil liberties or, you know, in a way that was problematic for someone like me who is a civil libertarian. So overall, I thought this was a pretty encouraging debate, certainly relative to what we saw 4 years ago or 8 years ago.
Raihan Salam, columnist for the conservative websites The Daily and National Review Online, and author of Grand New Party, How Republicans Can Win the Working Class and Save the American Dream. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer in WNYC, and we have former New York Governor Eliot Spitzer next. We'll keep talking about economics. His new book is called Government's Place in the Market. It'll be a different take than what we've just been hearing from the Republican hopefuls, clearly. We'll talk about other things, too, including same-sex marriage in New York right near the finish line. Stay with us.